John and Winnie will open the meeting with the UFW prayer. Please stand.
Show me the suffering of the most miserable, so I will know my people's plight. Free me to pray for others, for you are present in every person. Help me take responsibility for my own life so that I can be free at last. Grant me courage to serve others, for in service there is true life. Give me honesty and patience so that I can work with other workers. Bring forth song and celebration so that the Spirit will be alive among us. Let the Spirit flourish and grow so that we will never tire of the struggle. Let us remember those who have died for justice, for they have given us life. Help us love even those who hate us so we can change the world.
Enséñame el sufrimiento de los demás desafortunados, así conoceré el dolor de mi pueblo. Líbrame a orar por los demás porque estás presente en cada persona. Ayúdame a tomar responsabilidad de mi propia vida, solo así seré libre al fin. Concédeme valentía para servir al prójimo, porque en la entrega hay vida verdadera. Concédeme honradez y paciencia para que yo pueda trabajar junto con otros. El canto y la celebración levante el espíritu entre nosotros, que el espíritu favorezca y crezca para que no nos cansemos entre la lucha. Nos acordamos de los que han caído por la justicia porque a nosotros nos han entregado la vida. Ayúdanos a amar aún a los que nos odian, así podemos cambiar el mundo.
There's a card circulating around the room. Hopefully with a pen. It's for Bob Aplanop and his family. Bob's father died last week. Ann, you want to read the a much reduced list of managers and the minutes of the last meeting? Ann?
Caesar. Pete Velasco. Dolores Huerta, Frank Ortiz, David Martinez, Artie Rodriguez, Artie Mendoza, Oscar Mondragon, and Ben Maddock. Terry Vasquez.
Home with her sick kids.
Sick kids.
Chris Hartmeyer.
Here.
Paul Chavez.
Here.
Armando Garcia.
Here.
Kent Winter Road. And McGregor. Okay. The last meeting was held January 30th. And at the beginning, there was a service for Nan Freeman conducted by Chris Hartmeyer. Then it was decided to dispense with the formalities of the meeting. Next, there were reports from all of the boycott regional directors, Frank Ortiz, David Martinez, Artie Rodriguez, Artie Mendoza, Oscar Mondragon, Bobby De La Cruz, and Rebecca Harrington. Then Dean Beer gave a report on the victory, on a victory forcing Teamsters into arbitration with the United Farm Workers on a jurisdictional pact. This was a court victory. Chris Hartmeyer, then Ben announced a new Santa Maria contract negotiated by Mary McCartney. Then Caesar announced the celebration of the 25th anniversary of the union, scheduled for March 28th, but that has now been changed to May 23rd. After that, the Montessori School gave a skit on the Great Boycott, and the meeting was then adjourned to prepare for a reception and party.
Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? Do I hear a motion that they be approved as read?
No.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Way to go. Anybody need to be introduced? All right.
My sister Michelle Fernandez, I mean Belilla. She just started working here. She wasn't at the last meeting, so she moved.
Where is she working?
She's working at the president's office. Yeah. Stand up, Marcia.
All right. Any other introductions? Okay, anything to report from the boycott? Anything we didn't hear last week that we need to hear this week? Cecilia, you got any news?
Well, the meeting
has decided
that...
Speech.
That was a fascinating report by Cecilia Maurice. Yay! We'll let her ponder that one in her heart. Okay, anything else on the boycott? A report from crops. Ben, you got a report?
Last week we reported that we got a new contract to Susan Boster. I'd like to bring Mary up at this time. Not only I want you to give her a big hand, but since she had her, the very next day, she also had another important victory at a first that she had done. Mary?
Tell you a little bit about this Susa Boster contract. It expired 17 months ago, and the reason we hadn't gotten a new contract was everyone was waiting for a miracle to come around so that we could get a super fantastic, a really good contract, but there weren't any miracles coming. So a week ago Tuesday, the members elected Consejo de Base to make decisions and negotiations. I met with elected Consejo all evening. On Thursday, we made a plan to get the contract. We went into negotiations on Friday with the company, and we settled the contract. We had to give up some things, but we settled at $6.80 an hour, which is one of the highest hourly rates that we have in the union. Let me continue on. This is the miracle. In the afternoon, Bruce Church announced that they were cutting their wages. And they were cutting the holidays, and they were cutting their vacations. And every day since, we have heard of more companies who are cutting the wages. The miracle is, that Friday morning, we settled at $6.80 an hour, just before the word got out that everyone was starting to cut. So in Santa Maria, there's a lot of energy of workers now whose wages are being cut, and they see how just a few days ago the union settled for $6.80 an hour. In December, I did my first arbitration hearing against Phelan and Taylor, who refused to recall three seniority workers to work in the transplant celery crew. And those three seniority workers happened to be the three workers that brought the union into Phelan and Taylor back in 1981. Saturday, we got the arbitration decision. We won. John Taylor is going to have to pay them around $5,000, give them their jobs back in the transplanting. John Taylor, we were supposed to be meeting to negotiate with him. They were supposed to call me on Monday for a meeting. I can't get a word on when he wants to meet again. I know he's furious. This is the grower that just before the decertification last spring smashed in Lupe Castillo's car. When the ballots were finally counted in November and he found out the union won that decertification, he threatened me in the negotiations. There's a lot of terrible growers around, but he is the worst I have ever encountered, and he's one of the reasons why I keep working for the union, and if I could go back on the boycott, I would love to. He deserves to be boycotted.
Bruce Church. About a couple of months ago, over in Arizona cut all the wages, and it raised keen enough for the workers that they start that the workers asked the one group of workers asked the Independence Union of Arizona to come in. As soon as they came in, some workers of our own out there started having Gilbert to go out and start signing up the workers. Yesterday we had a meeting, a pre-election conference as such that you have in Arizona, is that at this type of meeting they tell you exactly how many cards that everyone got. They tell everybody. It's not secret like California. So we found out that the union had 54% of the workers at the company signed up. The independents had one. They finally come up with one card to give them 30%, and the Teamsters did not qualify. So the election is set on Friday the 13th. We think it's going to be evil for Ted Taylor. Because when he cut the wages in Arizona, he cut back from $7 to $4.50. He cut here in California from $7 to $4.50. And it just seemed like Mary said it's a miracle. About 2 hours after we had signed the $6.80, that this guy comes through cutting. And it's stopped. These cuts are really going on. Today in Salinas, all the non-union grape companies went down $1.50. It's happening all over, which I like, because I think the workers now have been kicked in the rear end long enough, and maybe a couple of more times, and they'll realize that their only real salvation is to get themselves organized. At the other thing, we had a good attack last week. This time we weren't part of it, but the animal rights people decided to raid Egg City. They went in, and they found a lot of problems, but they were part of the Humane Society, and Rick Carrot's such a smooth talker, he kind of got them sidetracked. But they were pointed out they have the dead barrels where they throw all the dead chickens in. Well, they've taken chickens out of the dead barrels and found out there's some live chickens that were thrown in the dead barrel in about 7 cases. And those are all misdemeanors. So we got the DA going on that. But today they tried to go back and pull another raid, and the company has all kind of armed people around there today. Rick Carrot has to face the creditors committee on the 23rd. It looks like, you know, unless he pulls off something really out of the hat, which he might, is it looks like he's going to be taken out of control on the 23rd. Because the sales are not going on. What's happening is that he starved the chickens for 9 days to make his profit and loss look good. Then he got in 14 carloads of feed, and then now he's back not buying again. So they're trying to really play with the figures. But he has lost over $4 million worth of sales since we started this. He has been on cash wise. He's been losing about $400,000 a month. Although the last statement said he made money, which there's a way to make it look like the way. We think that all he's doing right now is breaking the eggs and storing them. So we think something's really going to happen. We're hoping anyway.
Any other departments have a report?
I know you all know that a vicious flu is going around. I just want to remind you of one thing. Please don't go to work when you feel bad. Because what you're doing,
when you feel sick,
every day
you feel sick. When you feel sick. Sick, all right, sick.
Please, because what you might not realize is somebody working near you might be fighting off the flu just as to, and you might give that person a horrible case. Some people are really ill. We're talking 104 and 105 fevers. So it's not fair, just because you're able to deal with this thing at a low grade of 100 maybe or 99.8 and just cough around and spread your lovely bugs everywhere, the person next to you might not have that resistance. And it's not fair. And they have every right to kick you out, and I would too. Please don't. Stay home. If you don't, if you get sick in your room, go sit on the creek or something.
Any other department reports? Yes, Marcos.
Legal department.
Legal
department. One of the things Ben forgot to mention in his report is the Montpelier. Montpelier, we've been negotiating for a while. The contract, we started negotiating with them back in November. The contract expired December 31st. And as part of the activities that we started doing once the contract expired on December 31st, we started doing picket line. We started picketing the company's office. We started picketing the company attorney's office. And we also did one picketing of one of the owner's houses. And on Thursday, they went in for a TRO, or temporary restraining order, to restrain us from doing the picketing that we were doing. And a lot of this came about because we were threatening the next person that we were going to picket was the company's attorney's house. And so he's the one that went in.
Terrorist activity.
Terrorist activity. So what happened was they didn't get no TRO. The judge turned them down and said that he could not issue the TRO because the ALRB wasn't coming before him to ask for the TRO. So he didn't have jurisdiction to do it. So there was no TRO issued, and we're going to continue our picketing activity.
An amendment from Crops.
On this here, there's a company in Bicentia called Reasoner, where we won the election 29-0, but the company, we've got very close to a contract. We're only union security away from the contract. And whether he wants to deduct dues or not. So last week, we picketed a grower's house. Well, the grower called his father, and his father come down and got to chase people away. But his father come around the corner, he seen all the workers standing up there, and his father turned, made a U-turn, and left the area.
The grower called his daddy to come
to protect his house.
All right. Dolores, you have a report.
Well, one of the reports is that today in Washington, D.C., a federal judge issued an order to the Department of Labor that they have to put toilets in the fields for farm workers and give them cold drinking water all over the United States of America. He issued an order to the Department of Labor saying that they've got to write the regulations so that farm workers can have toilets. Okay. Now, we've been called by the press on this, and what I'm saying to the press is that unless you have a union contract out there with a union steward and a grievance procedure and an arbitration procedure, even though it's in the law, even though they make it a regulation, not one single farm worker out there is going to get a toilet. Because in California, we have had it in the books now for almost 20 years that farm workers are supposed to have toilets and clean toilets and cold drinking water, and unless we have a union contract out there, most farm workers do not have toilets, right? And so that's what we're saying. So, but, you know, they're seeing this as a big victory, and I'm just saying, well, it's kind of a sham. I'm also adding to that that for farm worker women in particular, it is very humiliating for them not to have a toilet because they have to, you know, bear themselves to be able to go to the bathroom. And if there isn't a bathroom, then they get a lot of infections and a lot of illnesses because they don't have a toilet. The other thing is that...
Are you going to report about the party, Mr. Franco?
No.
Okay. Wednesday night in Sacramento... There was a fundraiser that was organized by Richie Ross, and this was to raise money for the Franco baby, you know, the one that's in the video without any arms or legs, to help buy the family a house. And there were $10,000 raised at that party.
Mm-hmm.
Caesar gave a really short, I think it's one of the shortest speeches I've ever heard Caesar give. And the fact that it was there was a lot of heavy-duty politicos, including B.T. Collins. Remember B.T. Collins, who was with Jerry Brown, who's a kind of a tough guy, who I think he drank DDT to prove that it wasn't... Anyway, even this guy went to the party, you know? Oh, Malathion, right? That's a Malathion. Anyway, what Caesar said was so great because it was very short, and he just said that sometimes, you know, we have all of these big campaigns and all of these big wars that are going on, and we forget the little people, you know, the most sometimes to everybody else, what seems insignificant are the most significant things that happen. And in this case, it's that little child, the Franco child, you know, who doesn't have arms or legs. And he was, as you know, a very big factor in Proposition 65 because they used, you know, his image to win that proposition. And by the way, Tom Hayden and Tom Bates and Paul Eisenberg, these are all assemblymen, were all there at the party. And he explained to people that they want to build a house for the Franco child that can have the types of facilities so that he can get around. You know, the types of, get all of the mechanical things that he needs so that he can get around that house. The other report I want to make is that this Sunday there's going to be a mass for Rufino Contreras. February the 10th is the day that he was killed in the 79th strike, and there will be a mass in Calexico, and I will be going to that mass. And I won't be here next Friday to give you the report of the mass. I'm telling you now that that's going to happen. One other thing is that this week, Diana Lyons and I worked on getting the comments on the regulations that they're putting out for the legalization for the farm workers. And this is like the first draft, and we don't know what the final draft is going to be, but we'll let you know what happens when those come out. And one other thing, there's going to be a big meeting in the AFL-CIO on Monday where all of the unions will be getting together to see how the unions are going to be working together to be working on the legalization program. And the INS has just recently put out a new ruling that we just found out about today, and that is unless an organization can turn in 50,000 applications, that they cannot be a qualified designated agency. So what the AFL-CIO wants to do is to get all of the unions together to go under the umbrella of the AFL-CIO to get in the applications of the people who are undocumented. And we're still fighting that little war, well, it's a big war, where they don't want to let the cane cutters or the nursery workers or the dairy workers or cattle workers, they don't want them to be legalized. So that's a little war that we have going. So I'll probably be at that meeting in Washington to see what happens there and to get the help of the other unions to, you know, extend the legalization program to these other farm workers.
Any other departments? Standing committees. I believe the community committee has a report.
Areas where people are supposed to park their cars and the areas where people are not supposed to park their cars. And the main concern here is that this area around the hospital, that if a fire does break out at nighttime, those fire trucks have to be able to get in there without some car blocking the way.
Here's a Grandma Moses sketch.
Okay. What we've decided to do is... to make a sketch of the building or the surrounding buildings and to clearly identify for everybody what are the areas where cars are not supposed to be at and where cars can be at.
Okay, the fire department is having hissy fits for where we're parking. They have every right to. This is okay, Freeman Hall Administration Building, all right? Now, financial management. This is the road that goes between the two. And it swings over here behind Camilo's house, Velasco's, McGregor, and out, the switchboard. This one swings by the creek and swings over that way by the trailers. Okay, right at financial, this one comes, this is the road right in front of the Administration Building. goes to the parking lots, and then this red thing is the main road straight out. And you'll recognize this road that goes down right in front of the kitchen. All right. Here is the famous dumpster. Black, absolutely no parking for another reason. Those dumpsters can smash a car real fast just by getting that close to it with a trash can. But more important, the guy's not going to come near the dumpster if there's cars that he might risk hitting the car. Then we have a health hazard. So we've got to keep that area clean. Green is fine to park, all except that one block area. Parking lots, green, park. Red, no. Unloading and unloading is fine. Groceries, people, something like that, yes. Commuters, anybody. People come to credit union, no, they cannot park here. Okay? We're also talking propane tanks back here. All right? Those are highly inflammable. Do not park there. Anywhere you see red surrounded by black is a no-no. Greens are fine. I know it might be inconvenient for some of you in the hospital to have to walk a little ways, but it's going to be a lot more inconvenient if the fire trucks can't get to you. Okay? And these are absolute rules by the fire department. They are absolute rules. These are fire lanes. Okay?
They did a fire study on the Freeman Hall. If a fire started on top, quickly will it burn down? Between 8 to 12 minutes, that fire will go down. So that's how crucial it is.
Another reason to keep the fire doors closed between the corridors. That's why those doors are really closed. Like central wing, north wing, south wing, the two west wings, those doors have to stay closed.
Okay. What we're going to be doing is we would like for you guys to give you guys an opportunity to give us suggestions on what should we do with people that refuse to obey these rules. Now the rule's been set, and I think everybody's pretty clear on what the rule is. Now, does anybody have questions on it? Does anybody have questions where they can and cannot park? Are we all clear on where we can park and cannot park?
Lo que estamos hablando ahorita es acerca de dónde se pueden parquear los carros alrededor del hospital. Y la razón por la que estamos hablando acerca de esto es porque en caso que llegue a haber un caso de lumbre en el hospital, los bomberos tienen que llegar al hospital en la forma más posible, pronto y más cercana al hospital. Y si está un carro parqueado en cualquiera de esas áreas, va a prevenir que llegue el bombero al lugar donde se está quemando el edificio. Y lo que nos han dicho, el reporte que nos han dado de qué tan pronto puede quemarse el edificio, es de una vez comenzando una lumbre, una llamarada en el edificio, se tarda como de 8 a 12 minutos para quemarse todo el edificio. Entonces, lo que están pidiendo ellos es que necesitamos que mantener todas estas áreas limpias de carros, porque en caso que tienen que llegar rápidamente. Especialmente durante la noche, porque durante la noche, cuando la gente está dormida, nadie se va a dar cuenta de que hay una lumbrada. Y si está un carro parqueado aquí, preveniendo que el troque de los bomberos pase, para la hora que hay en el carro, el dueño del carro mueve y todo eso, ya tenemos todo. Entonces, lo que estamos diciendo es: las reglas se les ha explicado a la comunidad varias veces, y el problema es que la gente sigue parqueando los carros ahí. Entonces, lo que estamos pidiendo ahorita es sugestiones o ideas de qué hacemos con las personas que siguen parqueando los carros ahí. So what are the suggestions?
I have a question concerning the area around the dumpster. It's somewhat of a general scheme that you have there. How far on each side of the dumpster are we talking about? Is it possible that you can mark that with paint so that we know if it's over the line we're violating the fire law? Because, you know,
The dumpster's a whole different thing.
Dumpster's not a firewall. Dumpster's a health thing.
Okay.
Okay. We've had sawhorses up and they've come down. Painting ain't some great. Carwood. This way. Yeah. Have you ever seen those big trucks up there? They have all those claws that go around like dumpsters. If you would set a car this way next to it in your head, car length.
How big is the car?
And this is out of proportion. This thing is supposed to be bigger, but don't go near that dumpster. Really, I mean, because there's been trouble with this dumpster too.
This is a dumpster here by Camille.
Yeah, right up there.
Do you guys have any proposals for?
Yes. One of the proposals that's come up in this suggestion so far, we're going to be considering, is one that we institute some kind of ticket system where a person gets one ticket and either the second or third ticket either gets fined for having the car there or the car gets towed away. Exactly where it gets towed away, we're not sure yet.
That's right.
There has been the suggestion that we actually get someone to come and tow the truck, all the way to Bashaby. Or to tow it out to the North Unit. The problem with towing it out to the North Unit is that it's not very effective because people can have someone else to give a ride out to the North Unit and pick up their cars. So we're seriously considering the fine portion of it. Fine.
Now, if you tow the cars, they have to pay. The owner needs to pay for the towing, right?
No, the fine is fine if it's equal for everybody.
Don't be enforcing.
No. But I mean, if it's no exception.
How about
I don't care who that exception
is. If it's a guest car, does the resident have to pay for the tickets?
If it's a guest car?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
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 The
guest. Yes.
The rest
will be three tickets.
Ross, you get your guest to pay.
See, the whole idea is that the people should not be parking there, right? So, I think that we're all responsible to keep the cars out of it, and I think if you go to a fine, but you know, just. The main thing is bring them in here, find them right here in front of the people.
Yeah.
Bring them right here, but long as there's no problem, I always have is that if certain people do it, then there's always exceptions. And I'm saying that there shouldn't be one exception under no circumstances.
No, I don't think there should be exceptions.
Who would be responsible for the fining?
Okay, why did you pay, Marcos?
If my people
were there,
you know.
Who will be responsible for the fining?
Money or
payroll
deduction?
Car, green.
What? I didn't hear. Wait a minute. I didn't hear.
Money or community service?
Money.
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 And it'll be deducted directly from your check. So.
You know, an idea might be at Friday night meetings. You don't have a journalist, so to speak.
A what?
A journalist, so to speak. Just announce people that you have.
The direction doesn't work, Bubba. This is nothing new. We've been going through this for about 2 years, and we're still getting people parking on the South Kitchen, particularly the South Kitchen.
No, seriously, I was thinking of a reprimand. No, of a public reprimand in front of people. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, make it
not nearly as much as this.
we're making suggestions right now. So.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so there's a suggestion to a fine in both a public reprimand.
Becky had a question. Shannon had a question. Ken had a question.
But it's not like for 5 minutes. We're not, you know, if you just have to run in and run out with the keys in the car. Like some people have to unload their groceries by the kitchen.
We'll unload things and material things.
Yeah.
Okay, Shannon, who had a question?
No, I think that's good, like what Ben said, that we have the fine and the public exposure.
Everything.
Ken.
What? I don't think that you should be telling people it's going to cost you money.
It's not going to cost us money.
It's going to
You'll be my client, you have to fight me. I do not like towing. I don't like, see, one before they used to flatten tires, and that made me very angry. Because, see, that worker, the one who's really responsible, doesn't have to pay for it. If that car gets towed, and he can walk out of here tomorrow. It doesn't pay for it. The department pays for it. So I'm saying, if you're going to fine them, fine. If you tell me one of my people's there, they ain't going to do it again. But I'm saying that but towing the car is going to cost me money. Then I'm going to have to fight with you.
Okay, I think we kind of were discussing the idea of warnings and fines and maybe doing it here at the meeting, right? Flattening the tires didn't work too well because the people were stuck where they weren't supposed to be. Ronnie kind of like lost his head there for a while. But we could tow somebody someplace and flatten their tires then. Ken.
I suggest that on a day-to-day basis that we all be responsible for it, not just leave it to the committee, because I think that we probably all walk by cars that are parked there that we know aren't supposed to, they just don't say anything. And somebody that's doing that is endangering the law. So I think that the disapproval of everybody could have some impact too. And if you see the car there, just don't say, well, that's Marcos or Pudge's problem. And I think it would also be good to post it somehow, just with signs or something, so, as a reminder, and so visitors would know, and nobody could claim ignorance.
It's been posted before, temporarily. Gil, where would the fine money go?
That'll be up to the community.
Well, there's also a fund. There's the fund to fix up the Nan Freeman Hall too, which the Nan Freeman fine money is going into. So that's one possibility. It's the issue is most critical for the people who live in Nan Freeman Hall. So you all ought to be the most concerned to tell other people about it.
I mean, we can laugh, but if a fire breaks out there, someone...
Is everybody agreed that a fine system administered by the community committee with the help of the service center is a good idea? Okay. You guys are going to come up with an amount?
Right. We'll come back with the details, how the fine will work, how many warnings we're going to give you, and who's going to enforce it.
Okay. The PET committee has a brief report. There are two less pets in La Paz. The PET committee made a sweep this week, and a little black dog and a little stubby brown dog went to the pound. So they stay there for 3 days, and the owners were notified so that the owners could go and get them if they chose to. But while they're there, they're going to get their shots, and so getting the pet from the pound is expensive. As Ann said, the 25th anniversary celebration, which we had talked about as being in March, is now scheduled for May 23rd in Delano. So May 23rd, 1987, the 25th anniversary celebration. There'll be a notice in Father Ken's bulletin this week, but there's a new book out by friend Pat Hoffman about the impact of the farm workers' movement on the churches. And I have copies of it for $2. It's $8.95 on the, you know, on the bestseller list in your local bookstore. But you can get it from me for $2. And if you don't want anything else, there's pictures of the Hartmeyer family in here. Autograph. It tells how Pudge pursued her husband and all. The untold story. So anyway, if you have $2 and you're interested, let me know. This weekend, the officer of the weekend is Anthony Chavez. In case he's forgotten, someone might tell him that. Any other announcements?
Birthday.
Oh, that's right. We almost forgot birthdays. Her first announcement, Paul.
That was the same thing.
Okay.
Any other birthdays besides Veronica?
Yeah, we have one in the print shop. Felipe Salcedo, his birthday is today.
Okay, Felipe. Anybody else? Are we missing anyone? This week. Not next week. This week. Are we missing anyone? Okay. Armando, help Felipe translate for him. Okay? Make it easier. We want to know how old these persons are and when they first got involved with the farm workers movement. And ladies first. Come on.
Okay. Okay, I'm 19, and I got involved, well, since my dad joined, I was 2 years old. But but I came to La Paz 3 years ago, and I started working full-time last April.
All right, Veronica. Did you bring a present to display?
No.
Felipe.
Bueno, mi nombre es Felipe Saucedo Andrade.
My name is Felipe Saucedo Andrade.
His name okay. Is okay, hoy cumplo 23 años.
I'll be 23 years old today.
La primera vez que supe acerca de la Unión de Campesinos fue para...
The first time that I knew anything about the United Farm Workers Union...
Fue para el año de 84.
Was in 1984.
Oyendo acerca de en Radio Campesina.
So I learned about it through KUFW Radio.
Yeah. Me interesé mucho acerca del movimiento, supe acerca de Chávez.
I get myself interested in the movement, especially for Chisa and Chavez.
Me retiré de Estados Unidos para 84, mediados. O sea, me fui para México.
So he went back to Mexico in 1984.
A seguir estudiando.
To continue my studies.
Yeah. Regresé para el 85.
So I came back in 85.
Con la esperanza de conseguir muchos dólares.
Tried to, with a whole $2.
Pero realmente fui discriminado por los mayordomos.
Unfortunately, I was discriminated by the foreman.
Y decidí por medio de Saúl Martínez.
And through Saúl Martínez.
Unirme al movimiento campesino.
Joined the United Farm Workers Union.
Y estoy aquí.
And that's why I'm here. And this is
let's stand up. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Veronica and Felipe. Happy birthday to you. All right. Any other announcements?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, I did. Paul, did you have an announcement? No, you didn't. Huh? Anything else?
What happened to the baby cow?
Menudo.
Afuera, Galena, they all went. They didn't go to the butcher, they went to Delano. They're all alive and well. And if you want to visit them, just contact Ramon Gonzalez in Delano.
They're getting ready for the 25th anniversary.
Don't even spread such rumors. Anything else? Thank you. Good night.